And as we have... Hello, there we go, there we go. And as we have begun many, many moons ago, the famous WOR Gene Shepherd public service program entitled, which we bring to you at irregular intervals due to the fact that we have trouble with a bad knee, as we bring to you irregularly at irregular intervals, the program entitled, By George, Thank the Lord That There Is an England.
Good evening. It's time for the 6 p.m. news, the BBC edition, Overseas Division. And first, we have a news note from London, December 21st, from the BBC. Backward readers had a strong motive to improve, the National Book League said today. Reported the case of a soldier who learned to read out of a powerful desire to get through the unexpurgated version of Lady Chatterley's Lover. Moving to other news from Wales, every week for 42 years, David Thomas, a rather shy man, slipped a letter of love under the door of one Rachel Jones. And every week, Miss Jones refused to speak to him and mend the lovers' spat that had originally parted them. For 42 years, the couple lived on the same street, but never spoke except by letter. Then, earlier this year, Mr. Thomas summoned up his courage, knocked on the door, and asked Miss Jones to marry him. She accepted. Now they are wed. Both are now 74 years old. Again, the spirit of England's determination shines through the couple. I know Rachel has been true to me because we lived in the same street, and I was able to keep an eye on her, Mr. Thomas said. And what happened to the 2,184 love letters Mr. Thomas wrote over the years? I burned them, said Miss Jones. And now, one note on the historical scene. Miss Mona Matthews from Peterborough in the North Country, headmistress at the Peterborough Girls' School, today forbade her pupils to wear black brassieres or panties. Black underwear is Victorian and dates back to the days when people never washed, she said. And now, the weather. In the North Country, it shall be cloudy with touches of rain here and there. Altogether, a rather pleasant prospect. There's the 6 p.m. news from the BBC. This is the British Broadcasting Corporation Overseas Service. Good evening. And now, as part of WOR's vast public service program, we bring you news notes from the other side of the globe. WOR entitles this cultural stroll through the world's cultures. It's Getting to Know Thy Neighbor Better program, sent to you as part of our vast public service. Good evening, Radio Tokyo. January 10th. Something new has been added now with the news. Something new has been added to travel allowances. Housing allowances and other amenities contrived to make life easier. The love allowance. to the 130 employees of the Kiyomoisha Musical Instrument Company in Ina, Central Japan. It holds promise of being the most rewarding allowance of all. The system, as developed by Monyoki Kitahara, President Company's 31-year-old president, it works like this. A male and female worker are attracted to each other and want to go steady, as they say in Western cultures. So they inform President Kitahara, who officially at the plant announces them to be in love. Then for the duration of their courtship, each receives a love allowance of 500 yen a month. So far, one couple has been united in wedlock following this procedure, and four couples are engaged. We have had no breakups as yet, but even if engaged couple decides to call it off, there is no penalty, says President Kitahara. You'll see, he explained, the whole idea is to promote productive efficiency and harmony, and it certainly does. Previously, the company in question had been wrecked by a series of personnel problems, mostly caused by personal jealousies. Now, said President Kitahara, we are more like one big happy family. When two people are in love, they come out and freely say so. I announce same. Public announcement of the love affair also serves, in effect, as a warning to others not to interfere. President Kitahara said he arrived at the 500 yen a month figure because he calculates that's about what it costs by country standards for one person to see two movies a month with a snack after each. In other words, it's a sort of like, in the Western culture terms, dating money, so couple can go out and enjoy themselves on President Kitahara, he said. Efforts are made to adjust job positions so two people officially in love, as has been announced by me officially, can work side by side at workbench. And they are encouraged to continue working together side by side after marriage. Kitahara, president, who exports ukuleles and guitar to United States, Canada, and Laos, says he has received inquiries from several other Japanese firms who want to try the love allowance idea. All requests for information should be addressed to President Kitahara, Kamioisha Musical Instrument Company in Ina, Central Japan. Thank you. And we move now to other news on the cultural and commercial front. Tokyo. The president of a Japanese firm climbed into a cardboard coffin before millions of Japanese TV viewers to demonstrate in a commercial that his product is, as we quote here, quite soft and comfortable. He makes coffins. The executive reclined in one of his firm's new paradise coffins and then had six of his employers carry him away, Paul Bearer style, in beautiful style fashion. The product, developed by a paper company, retails for about 15 Western dollars, about half price of a standard Japanese pine casket. It now has bearing beautiful name, Paradise Coffin. And so Radio Tokyo once again supports and salutes the outstanding commercial efforts of Japanese and in particular Tokyo businessmen who are marching forward in the beautiful fashion to carry once again the commercial flag of Japan over the world. And so, once again, we bring to a close tonight's 6 p.m. news. This is Radio Tokyo Overseas Service. Thank you. Oh, oh, beautiful Japan. Oh, beautiful, oh, eternal Eastern culture. Oh, all-wise, oh, all-seeing Eastern wisdom, we salute thee as once again the south wind blows ever so gently over the land of the rising sun. Again, Tokyo businessmen, we at Radio Tokyo salute you for public spirit and moving forward with 20th century time. Oh, have here as a special addenda from overseas, mysterious Western culture, inscrutable Westerner. We bring you following news note from southern western part of USA. Billy Sal Estes, convicted swindler and bankrupt financier of United States, says he is going to turn to preaching gospel in answer to many calls and requests. Mr. Estes is free on state and federal bonds totaling $130,000. So the mysterious, inscrutable West marches on. One more inscrutable Western note on Radio Tokyo's Inscrutable Western Culture Hour. From Portland, Oregon, a woman who quits her job because her boss called her an old bag is entitled to unemployment compensations. The Oregon Unemployment Compensation Commission has decided. Cut it out now, all of you. It's all right, don't worry. I'm in perfect control. I'd like to be. Speaking of children, this is WORAM with FM New York. And in case you're wondering, those are all actual news notes from the countries involved. And, you know, I'm thinking about this thing of coming out and frankly admitting it. That hanky-panky is going on between the desks in the office. I kind of like that forward-looking, realistic attitude of Brother Duncan Tahawa of Ukulele Company. Somehow I like the idea of all these swingers making ukuleles and sending them all over the world. We have with us tonight the Show magazine people. And if you haven't seen a copy of Show, I can only recommend that you do. When I read that item about people making the scene, working together in an office, I just wonder how many people listening right now have got a thing going in the office. Now, this thing may not even be active. That's, by the way, the most sneaky kind of all. It is the kind that is absolutely perfect. I'm just curious how many of those things are going on right now, right at this very minute, among guys that are listening. Look me right in the loudspeaker and say, come on, raise your hand and say that you are not guilty. I'll bet there's a lot of guys saying, oh, what's this nut talking about? And the wife is saying, I don't know, George. It sounds interesting to me. What is he talking about? Well, it's an interesting fact of modern life that this is the way it is. And I must tell you about the time when I was this kid working in the steel mill. I don't know whether any of you have ever met a steel mill girl, a genuine steel mill girl worker. Now, I don't mean a girl who works in the office. I mean a steel mill laborer girl. Well, let me tell you about this time. I'm working in the steel mill. Eddie, I think the first thing you got to do is to hold it there. I'll give you the cue for it because we must introduce you to the steel mill world before we introduce you to the steel mill chick. This was one of the great traumatic experiences of my romantic existence. Well, now let me tell you how it was. Every day, now the steel mill is like, well, the steel mill is all the noisy, frightening, confused, involved, disorganized, organized machines that you have ever run into in your life, all put together, amplified by 10, and then covered with a thick, fine, gritty dust, and then sprayed thoroughly with an enormous layer of smoke, and then lit by the dim, flickering orange lights of hell. Now, that really is the way a steel mill is when you're in a steel mill. When you're in a steel mill, you can no more comprehend the steel mill than you can comprehend the big picture when you're in a Signal Corps record tape machine platoon 4,000 miles back of El Alamein. I mean, it is just an incomprehensible thing. But I'll tell you how it affects you physically and it affects you mentally. It removes you from the outside world almost completely. Because the outside world doesn't know any kind of violence. It doesn't know the kind of violence that big machines have. Now, the excitement of a big machine is an excitement. Now, it has nothing to do with cars. You know, sometimes when you stood next to... Have you ever stood next to a tremendous, throbbing, a beautifully designed, purely functional diesel truck, Ed? Have you? Well, you know how there is an unmistakable lure to these things. You know that? Now, I don't know whether it ever affects women this way. I'm not equipped to argue that. But I know that most men somehow find this, perhaps at the same time it frightens them, this machine, but just like almost everything that scares the pants off of you, it also lures you on. You know, when you're looking at the Grand Canyon, it scares the daylights out of you. But at the same time, you have an incalculable urge to walk right up to the edge and look over it, and perhaps even flap your arms and fly right over the darn thing. Now, what is it, you know? There it is, you know? How many times have you ever had that strange little urge? You look out of a building, oh, boy, you know? Something is, it lures you. Well, this is the way these insane machines are. A couple of days ago, I was on 23rd Street, and it was at 23rd and 7th, and I was walking across the light, just coming across. The light was green. I was walking along, and I heard to my right, I heard this. There's no idling in a real diesel. I mean, it doesn't. It's never idling. There is just degrees of anger in a real diesel when it's going. That's one of the things that often frightens people about diesel engines is that the diesel isn't a docile engine. It really isn't. Excuse the terrible pun. But and I look up and there is that beautiful, beautiful, great big fat snub-nosed ugly Cummins diesel cab over engine. An enormous baby. He looked like a story and a half high standing there. And the guy sitting inside of this thing was completely surrounded by green glass. Just sitting in there nonchalantly smoking a cigar, spitting out of the window. And he had something like Emma Lou written in big yellow letters on the front, you know. And he had 37 lights across the front of this thing. Red, green, blue, yellow, danger lights, go-ahead lights, pass lights, go-to-hell lights, all kinds of lights all over the front, you know. He had 7 great big horns laying up on top of that thing. And then running up the side right behind his cab was that enormous manifold muffler. And coming out of the top, the big, long black pipe and that exhaust. And he just sat there. Well, next to him was some guy in his fair lane, you know, some little cream puff pulls up there. And another guy comes up behind him, you know, driving his Austin Healey. And here was this guy sitting up on top of a pair of wheels, believe me. Well, I'll tell you what it was. These wheels were literally camels among a world of chipmunks. Great, big, fat, spitting camels. And, you know, the scurrying little chipmunk. And he just sat there, and I walked past this guy, and I thought, you know, wow, there it is. There it is. And he just sitting there nonchalantly. Well, I got over to the other corner of 23rd Street, and I turned around, and it was a dark forest green, this thing. And it was towing a trailer that was 3.5 blocks long. And on the top of this trailer, of course, were another 9,000 lights with a great big insignia across the top of it. And this guy just sat there and waited, and then suddenly the light changed yellow. It changed, go ahead. And boy, that old muffler is rattling, and that exhaust is a-pouring out there. And it's just roaring and shaking. Everything is going. And I could feel the street crumble and jiggle under me. Little old ladies were cowering behind their shopping bags. And big fat old Gus there was throwing her into third. He's getting it up, you know. He's going. He's moving east.
and he's heading out towards that one, that number one street out there, old First Avenue, where he would turn left, head out over the bridge, and then finally head out to his destination. Oh, wow, you know? Wowie. Well, I'm watching this guy disappear over the horizon, leaving his long trail of black smoke. And a wake, literally, you could see the wake of little cars rocking behind him as he went. Well, I was reminded, of course, of the steel mill, where this kind of power is you can't put your finger on it. It is just so big. It reminds you, in some ways, of an artillery barrage that has gotten completely out of control, thoroughly and utterly out of control. And so when I used to go past a place called, well, we had a place called the number one drop forge shop. Do you know what a drop forge is? Any of you know how drop forge technique works? Well, I suggest you look that up in your dictionary. It is a sight to behold. And when I would come trotting along in the dead of winter like this, have you noticed what the temperature is in Chicago these days? I hope you've been noticing it. Well, as of this morning, they said, oh, no. As of this morning, the newscaster, I believe it was Hennessy, casually announced that in the suburbs of Chicago, the temperature stood this morning at 7 at 19 below zero. The suburbs. Well, that's where the steel mill is, Dad. In fact, the steel mill is the suburbs, and it sticks right out in the middle of the lake. So if it's in the suburbs, it's 19. You can knock 10 degrees off of that, and you have what it is out in the drop forge number one, or out in the sheet metal scales, or perhaps even in the slag scales, which is way out in the lake. So I would say roughly this morning the temperature was 25 below zero where I used to work. Well, every day it was like that in the winter. They always get anywhere from 10 to 15 below. Well, that wind would come howling down between the 14-inch merchant mill and the rolling shop, and it would come howling over the roof of the drop forge plant, number one. There was number one and number two. Well, I would come trotting down between the two of these things with these two great sheets of black mottled iron. There were no windows, you know, in the steel mill, just great iron buildings. It's absolutely functional. No fooling around. Raymond Loewy hasn't got within 40 million miles of this joint. These guys are making steel. They're not fooling around. And so I would come trotting like mad, and I would get within about, I'd say 100 yards of the drop forge plant, and I would feel the ground shaking under me. Literally, and I mean actually. The ground would boom, boom, boom. It would go. And then there would be a slight pause. Boom, boom. Boom. Shh. Boom. Boom. And they are working in the drop forge plant. And I could just feel this. Boom. 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 Well, this is a world you don't quickly forget. You never get it out of you because it's a world you never again see because it exists no other place. Heavy industry is hardly ever reported on, you know, among writers because very few writers that I've known have ever been in heavy industry, literally. Now, often when they report on it, what do they report on? Gigantic power struggles between Kirk Douglas and Spencer Tracy for control of the ironworks. You know what I mean? In the executive suite tradition. Well, let me tell you, it's a very far different world than is ever actually reported. Now, the people who live in steel mills develop their own peculiar type of morality. They also develop their own attitudes towards things, which are as special, believe me, as a guy who lives, let's say, in the 7th Avenue delicatessen and is surrounded by salami. His whole world is bounded on the right by Henny Youngman and on the right by Milt Kamen. I mean, it's a very special Broadway world. A guy who reads Variety all day long, he develops a special world of showbiz. He develops a world of B.O. and the Nabes. Well, in the steel mill, it is just exactly like that. All kinds of little inner workings of social hierarchy.
all sorts of little subtleties of jobs, position, and danger, too, I might add. And also, of course, there's a thing like tonnage and work stop. Oh, the whole schlemu. Well, every day, me, 17-year-old messenger, clear-eyed, bright, shiny, bushy-tailed, sparkly-eared, wearing my corduroy hat with the earmuffs, wearing my special colored goggles for the glare, yes, wearing my steel-toed shoes, wearing my corduroy pants, wearing my high boots, carrying my big sack, I would come galloping through the tin mill. Now, let me tell you about the tin mill. In the tin mill, there is a section called the tin mill assorting. Now, what they do in the tin mill assorting is roughly this. Tin, now, tin really is not tin. It is not made of tin. You know, the tin can that you get stuff out of is not tin. It's not. It's steel, you see. It's black plate. It's a kind of steel that is coated with thin plate, very thin coating of tin. Now, the tin plate mill makes this stuff. It makes all kinds of tin plate, millions of kinds of tin plate. Well, they have way down at the end of the tin plate mill the thing called the tin mill assorting. Now, this tin comes out of the machines in sheets, roughly the size, 28 by 28, roughly. Maybe 32 by 32. Big, flat sheets of shimmering, beautiful, silvery tin. So beautiful and so silvery that your eye just can't believe it. It is just a magnificent sight. It does not look like the tin that is in your tin can, because that tin has already been coated with a thin coating of protective coating of some kind, usually varnish or some kind of oil. But tin, freshly tinned, is more silvery than silver, Ed. It really is. It is. I'll tell you what it looks like. It looks, in a strange way, it looks like a cross between mercury and moonlight, because it shimmers. Mercury is kind of dead. This shimmers because it moves all the time. It just moves because it's flexible. It moves. And in just a few minutes, it's like out of the machine, maybe a half an hour, and already a thin glaze of oxidation is forming. So it is like the first blush of dawn on tin. You cannot understand tin unless you've seen tin when it's just been born. Just comes out of the machine. It's magnificent. Well, there are long, flat tables in the tin mill, steel tables. And next to those steel tables stand girls, tin mill girls. And they wear bright blue uniforms with kind of Buster Brown white collars. Yes, they do. And they stand there and they have a big pair of gloves made out of cut-up inner tubes. Yes, big flat rubber things, you see, that they use. And hour after hour, these girls flip sheets of tin over, examine first one side and then the other. But this is the thing that makes it a sight you just can't see unless you've seen it. They do it under a special combination of infrared, ultraviolet, fluorescent, neon, and argon light. Yes, it is a battery of lights over each girl that makes a special reflection on the tin as she flips it high up in the air. It catches the light, and her eye moves over the tin quickly, and she can see, because she's been trained, any blemish in the tin sheet. She goes, and it flies in the air like a sheet of steel, like a sheet of moonlight, really. It goes down. Then she goes, it comes down again. Well, all these girls are standing in a row, 300-400 of them. And under that beautiful bluish, greenish, yellowish, orangish, goldish light, flipping those sheets of moonlight, these girls look like creatures you could never comprehend. These are women incarnate. And I am 17 years old, every day running between these paragons. Every day, these beautiful, unearthly creatures, they had color like you never saw in your life before. Something in the argon, something in the neon brought out their blood. It brought out the color of their eyes. Their eyes would be gentian violet. They're flipping. An old Shep was running down there, his pimples popping every inch of the way, his eyeballs bugging. And one day, I had formed a thing with a girl at the far end. And every day I would run past and I would look at her and I would say, hi. And she would just look.
her blonde hair just magnificent, and her gentian violet eyes just looking out at me. Oh, beautiful. No, no, you're wrong. She was an 18-year-old peach bloom, flipping sheets of sunshine, moonlight. The only trouble, she was 7 feet tall. And I would go scurrying past her, looking at this magnificent monument to all women. One day she disappeared, and I never saw her again. Somewhere, this 7-foot stainless steel epitome of all that is woman exists, flipping sheets of moonlight.